Good intermediate time of day, soccer family and friends, and welcome to another episode of Two Dudes, One Ball, The With Onion Soccer Podcast. And now your host, who owns as many teles as eyes gouged by Moussa Dembele, it's Michael White!
Ah. Boo!
And also here is Ryan Brown.
Hi!
And we are back, episode 4. We've reached 4 episodes. It's impressive, an impressive effort. As always, you can find us on Twitter at Two Dudes One Ball, me at Michael L. White, Ryan here at RyanMB30 on the Twitter machines, show notes, and links to our iTunes, Stitcher, and a regular
podcast. Are we on iTunes
now? We are. You can search us. You can go to our at Two Dudes One Ball Twitter and follow the link there, even just regular search. And the regular show notes at withonions.com.
Half the time I didn't want to listen to the podcast because it wasn't easy to get to.
No, you had to finagle the RSS feed, and that's never fun. So now you can search it in whatever your podcatching app you're using. We are legit. We are almost so legit that we are now unable to retire from said legitness.
Have you looked at the list of Two Dudes podcasts on iTunes? Two Dudes Talk, Two Dudes Watch Girls, Two Dudes and a Gay. In this case, it's one dude and one gay. I'm the gay one, in case anyone ever had questions. Although, Michael, that's kind of...
I have the line from a famous heterosexual comedian, Greg Proops. I'm a heterosexual man, and I make no case for it.
So wait, what is our pot? Two Dudes, One Ball?
Yeah.
I'm not seeing it on iTunes. Is it two, like two is a letter two?
Number two. You're doing this live, and you're fucking with my pre-roll written re-roll. God damn you. In related news, while you're doing your search, we have an unofficial sponsor.
Really?
Yeah.
Who is it?
Well, it's unofficial since I haven't asked them for money and they haven't given us any. But nonetheless, our sponsor is Puma, the official kit supplier of Champions.
Except for Arsenal.
Wait, yeah, there's an asterisk here. Also the official kit supplier of Arsenal Football Club. Well, you can't win them all, can you? You know, you gotta throw some bones to the English minnows, too. All right. Well, anyway... Back with our fourth episode, we'll be talking about the recent slate of Thorns games that have come, maybe preview the Rain game coming up here soon, as well as, and maybe a pour one out for Ryan's Toddies that have recently seceded and given up for second. That's okay,
you know
though.
What? They went down fighting, and not in a good way.
Yeah, you could have just left it at went down fighting, or angry, or like backup goalkeepers trying to choke out starting players, that's always fun.
Well, no, I don't want anyone to think I condone what happened, because I don't.
No, of course not.
I don't. It was...
I'm not friends with condoners or non-condoners, or I'm too...
I was at work watching that match and just thinking we really should be down. Three of our guys should have gotten red cards. Dyer, yeah. Musa, Lamella, more than likely, should have gotten a red card. But, like, holy Jesus... That match was just insane.
I think the Clattenburg is my favorite English ref. He's the receding hairline, black hair. You know, he looks salty, shaking his finger. But he did not. As much as there are worse refs that don't control the intensity of big matches, he did a terrible job there.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst part was right at the end. You know, there's the foul on the breakaway at the beginning, continuation. That's okay. Like that should have been a damn yellow. And then it finishes up with the rough but at least yellowish tackle from behind. I think that also might have been Dyer. So technically Dyer's was the first. Dyer should have had two yellows at least, if not one straight red to begin with.
Because I think Dyer, his first yellow, he didn't. I don't think he had the first foul or the first warning. I think that was Danny Rose had the first warning.
I think at end of the first half.
No, before then, because so at the end of the first half, there was the confrontation between Danny Rose and William. Prior to that, though, early on, there was a confrontation between Danny Rose and one of the Chelsea players that should have warranted a yellow, but the ref decided against it and just decided he was going to talk to people first, which should not have happened. There should have been a straight yellow on Danny Rose. Dyer should have had a yellow early on. Yellow should have been handed out much early on, and Dyer probably should have just had a red. The end of the first half.
English refs are usually pretty good about letting things go, talk, and then give the accumulations early in the second half, and then the players wake up and adjust. But Clattenburg started throwing the yellows out way too late, when worse aggressions already come, cumulatively or not. I'm totally fine with cumulative. I mean, that's a thing that MLS would do, but they would, their cumulative yellows happen at the end of the fucking season if you're fucking lucky. But yeah, it was a shit show.
Do you think he trained with Pro? Is that why he just...
He might be their main consultant now after they watch it. Oh, yeah. Look at you controlling that fucking game of intensity. Like, as a guy, I follow the English Championship. I'll watch League One and League Two highlights in England. And as much as they say those are rough and tumble leagues, they are if you're a Spaniard who's getting loaned down a tier or two. They're much rougher than what you're used to. But if you're watching MLS, I mean, that's a fucking cakewalk. It's a jaunty tune and a walk around the park. What MLS and Pro have allowed to have happened all these years is just what you'd expect when you make the rules. If you're a loose parent who doesn't give timeouts and let kids roam free, mm-hmm. shit gets real. MLS is doing the same shit.
What is the name of the general manager for Pro? Is it something... Peter Walton or something like that?
I don't know if I've ever bothered to look up the hierarchy there.
Anyways, but he's been defending Pro's... he's been defending all of his refs and saying... I think he actually made a comment that there have been refereeing organizations around the world that have come knocking on Pro's door wanting their refs to... And it's like, you're full of shit.
Well, I think you and I talked about this, not on a pod, but over the air, and it was like... Well, there are lots of countries we're better at. It's like, yeah, but it's all the ones that we laugh at when they have their top professional tier. We have much better refs. Like, if you're not going to be the guy at the head of Pro working with MLS and say, I mean, look at our refs compared to the Indian Premier League. Look at what we're doing. We're awesome.
Or maybe even, like, the Liga MX.
Yeah.
Like, I can't stand... I refuse to watch any of the CONCACAF games because a lot of their refereeing that goes on, I'm just like... This is bullshit.
You never know what money's flying underneath sometimes, or at least you get that stink going.
Yeah. So anyways, reffing, going back to the Tottenham-Chelsea match, and then which led to Leicester clinching the title. Good for them. I'm not upset.
No.
Would I have liked,
fun story.
Would I have liked to have seen Tottenham win it? Of course. But it was nice to see a team win it that wasn't one of the big three.
Absolutely.
Well, I say big three because I don't consider Arsenal a big club. They think they are, but they're kind of stagnant at this point. And actually, mm-hmm. I think pretty much all those clubs...
They're a mid-tier buyer. You know what? Mm-hmm. When you hear the gossip rumors, like whether it's Berahino over the last 2 years or other players from other leagues, their transfer fee range maybe seems to top off at 15 to 25 million for the big boys mm-hmm. versus, you know, Chelsea will throw 25 million at a guy that they'll loan out 3 minutes later and he'll never see the light of day on the main roster. Like Cuadrado... Even De Bruyne when he was there versus everywhere else, you know, in the league. Well, you know, that's big time money for the lower, for the 14 of 18 placed mm-hmm. squads, but it's not anything less.
Keeps them out of relegation.
Yeah. One thing they talk about in regards to Tottenham and the lashings of, if you want to call them, the young, you know, youthful lack of experience in the run to the title. Yeah, they're young, and honestly, Pochettino probably should be coach of the year because, you know, you get a series of 19-year-olds to do that well together with no experience behind them is pretty impressive. You know, you get all of the 19 to 23-year-old to 25-year-olds at Arsenal, and they're a fucking shit show, mm-hmm. even behind a seasoned backline. What they've done, what Dele Alli's form all year has been great. You know, Kane's been amazing.
Dyer.
Yeah, absolutely. Dyer looked wishy-washy the last few years. Even Walker wasn't a complete shit show this mm-hmm. year the way he had previously.
Yeah, Danny Rose has looked okay. Danny Rose has flashes of brilliance. Sometimes he's got some really sloppy crosses. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. He has a fire. I don't know if Pochettino has found a way to control it, or maybe he's better off as a 30-minute sub. I am not quite sure. We'll see as they build the depth towards Champions League
yeah.
next year.
I think normally who would play his sub would be Kieran Trippier. And yeah. I just don't think he's up to the same level of play. Like, he's good for Europa League.
Mm-hmm.
You know, chances are, assuming the FA doesn't suspend, like, our starting 11, chances are we'll probably... I'm actually wondering if we're going to see Trippier in the match again, in our match against... Southampton this Sunday.
Pochettino's done a very good job of take guys you would expect to be multi-year loanees and actually give them time.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Mason and a couple other guys. Just your, let's call them for your non-Tottenham following people, your generic 19 to 20-year-olds who you've never heard of outside of the U21s. He's given them minutes, solid starts in Premier League and FA Cup, and that's a really good model versus, you know, the Chelsea have loaned them out 14 times to back to Belgium and see what the hell happens.
Yeah.
Versus, going back to the experience thing, Leicester are a bunch of 26 to 31-year-olds. They've all been seasoned in the Bundesliga or in the Premier League. Huth was in the Premier League with Stoke forever. Fuchs was in a lot of Champions League contention fights when he was out in Schalke, etc. Kind of makes sense when you think about their age and experience working together under a flexible head coach.
I wonder how they're going to do next season. Because I think the one strength that Leicester had over any of the other teams in the top four is that they, outside the FA Cup, they weren't competing in any other tournament. Tottenham had the Europa League. Man City, Man United were in, and Arsenal were in Champions League. Leicester didn't really, I don't know how long they lasted in the FA Cup.
Maybe round 4 or 5 replay. Round 3 is typically when all of the Championship and Premier League teams start. So, yeah, I think they won one, and then they did the double, maybe 1-2, then the double replay and lost.
Oh, because we played them in the FA Cup, yeah. I think. Because we had two, yeah, because I think we played them like 4 times in a 2-month period.
Yeah, 3 in 5 weeks, I think it was. It could be something like that. But, yeah, they need depth. They're going after a couple of really fun Italian players. I think his name is Njai. He's this whirlwind 21-year-old striker that Chelsea tried to buy from AC Milan last year. They definitely need a backup keeper. Their primary backup keeper this year was Mark Schwarber, who got minutes last year for Chelsea after Cech got all his injury shit going down. And, yeah. If they build depth, they can do well. I would expect them to bounce, but compete in the Champions League group stages. I don't expect them to make it out. They have a lot of work to do with that money, and if I were that coaching staff, I don't think I'd put a lot of money into Champions League depth, because, you know, you worry about that, you mix up the rotations, and then next thing you know, you're seventh in the league. We'll see. It should be fun.
I wonder how many of their original players they're going to keep, or how many they think they're going to sell and make bank on them and then bring in different
players. So far,
players.
They haven't been... Since they dropped to League One and built back up, they have not sold a lot of players. You don't know... There are not any real pipeline players that left when the big bucks were sold, because the Thai money was enough from the 14-word last name family that owns the club from Thai that I can't pronounce right now. You know, they buy the small things. You know, they spent $1 million on Vardy. They spent a few hundred thousand on David Nugent, who's now trying to bring Middlesbrough up to the Champions League. Those kind of like second tier only guys. But I mean, fucking Wes Morgan this year. Holy shit! Some of those guys just were revelations, even regardless of the star players that we know about, like Conte and Vardy and Mahrez and Albrighton. Of course, Albrighton. I shouldn't mention that to certain of our Aston Villa loving friends that Albrighton was a fucking, you know, dynamo throwing crosses in from the left midfield position this year. That was fun.
Yeah. Anything else EPL related we want to get into?
Nothing. It'd be interesting to see what direction City goes next year with their new head coach.
Yeah, well, because they're bringing Guardiola. In Pep, aren't they?
Yeah.
That's interesting to figure. I'm interested to see what your usual top four are going to do next year.
Yeah.
Like Man City, Man U, Chelsea. I wonder if they're going to be able to make it into the top four next year.
I think they need to scrub off some of the age in that back line. Obviously, Terry will be gone. Ivanovic might need to be a bench-only guy or get sold off at the right back. He's too slow to handle any outside speed. Got to get Eden Hazard up and going. Fun thing related, Eden has a brother at Borussia Mönchengladbach who's really fucking good, and Leicester are actually trying to get him as an attacking mid next year.
Ah.
That would be fun. But Chelsea has a lot of... I think they need to scrub. They have so many... players they sent off on loan that they can reload and we don't even know what happened. Well, we'll see. Tottenham, build depth for them. Arsenal, sell Walcott. Fucking sell Walcott. Sell him to West Brom. Sell him to Birmingham City in the second tier. Just stop. He's injured. If you want to grasp your wrists and try to not slit your throat that you're playing an injured Jack Wilshere at in the central midfield all the time, go ahead. But Walcott's got to go.
I wonder what Gwen would feel about that.
That is a really good question.
What to have her on here?
Absolutely.
Listen to her rant about Arsenal.
Absolutely.
Do you see the comments that Arsene Wenger made about how they might not have lost? They might have been able... Because I think the whole narrative for this season was that the championship or the league was Arsenal's to win. Because the top four weren't... Because Man United and Man City were having issues and Chelsea was... You know, people were joking about them being relegated. I would have loved to have seen that. But, you know.
We only had like 4 weeks of that threat. It was too bad.
That was a hell of a ride, though.
Yeah,
for 4 weeks watching Chelsea fans suffer. That was great. Do you remember the guy who, when Mourinho got sacked, a guy got on Twitter and was essentially just talking about how the club let Mourinho down and Mourinho was the greatest ever. And he's so ashamed. And the Chelsea tears that flowed were just incredible.
It's the three-year syndrome with him. Two and a half, 3 years in, and something cracks where his totalitarian regime with the players gets old. You know, there's different ways to approach people in a workplace, whether it's, working in a warehouse or working with professional prima donnas.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you need to know how to attack each individual one, and Mourinho seemed like the type of guy who was one size fits all. At least maybe that's the way he exerted to the media to get people off his back, but it kind of makes sense when you see how quickly he'll fall even after winning Champions Leagues mm-hmm. with Inter or Real Madrid or whatnot. I don't know. He might take a year off before and let Louis van Gaal finish up his career there. We'll see. There will be different levels of chaos next year, even if the top four looks the same at the end of the 2016-17 season.
It's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be fun because, you know, you've got those clubs who think they just deserve to be in the top four because that's where they've always been.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be interesting to see how they retool their lineup in their bench and just see to try to get back into the top four. Personally, I thought that maybe West Ham was going to be the dark horse and that they would probably end up taking the championship. So I just thought, you know, they were doing really well and no one was talking about them.
Oh, yeah.
But I think right now they're fighting for...
sixth? Yeah, they're on the edge.
Of Europa. But it looked like they might have been contending for at least a playoff spot into the Champions League.
Yeah. The problem is, though, with Liverpool now today being... the Thursday of the Villarreal second leg, they're now in the final. Liverpool's in the final. They are sixth or seventh. If they win it outright, they will take over the fourth spot, or the last round of play-ins going into Champions League. They will drop them out, and therefore you're looking at, I think, United at this point being knocked out, or no, City. I'm sorry, City is fourth right now. City would be knocked out if the top four holds, and Liverpool manages to beat, I think it is Sevilla, who they'll play in Milan. Anyway, so yeah, there could be that kind of level of chaos with that Europa automatic into the group stages thing.
Personally, I think it'd be great to watch Arsenal drop into fourth and then Liverpool take their spot.
You
Liverpool...
need to protect your second place there first and make sure St. Totteringham doesn't happen again, buddy.
Yeah, I know. Just let me have this for right now.
I'll let you have it for as long as we start talking about the NWSL.
Okay. All right, so we had a game.
We are 4 points in 2 games, our Portland Thorns, on the road. What kind of dastardly deeds is that compared to...
We took a point in Boston.
I know. No one deserved even a single point in for most of that game. There were a couple of nice crosses in the second half by Boston with nobody around the 10-yard spot to do anything with. That's their own damn fault, I figure.
That game felt like no one was really playing to win.
Yeah, I felt like everyone phoned it in.
Mm-hmm.
The announcing wasn't as bad as some of the other away games we've watched in years past.
I don't know. The announcing was like... It's such a crapshoot with the NWSL and the commentators.
Yeah, I respect their commitment to spending that time and being paid next to nothing additional for what they do, but...
Mm-hmm. But I think something that was interesting for me was like listening to the commentators talk about how, saying, "Oh yeah, it's the Thorn supporters that are here, and probably Thorn and Thorns fans back in Portland have probably been dividing their attention between this match and their other beloved team who are also playing at the same time, the Portland Trailblazers."
Yeah,
and I'm like, that shows how little attention they pay to MLS. And into the Revs in their own market when they think that Thorns fans are paying attention to the Trailblazers and not the Timbers, because to them it's like MLS just isn't even a big enough player.
Well, yeah, and Trailblazers, as devoted a fan base as they are for as small a market to the NBA size as it is, they're playing against the greatest or second greatest team of our lifetimes based on general scoring acumen and regular season dominance. So
Phoenix Suns. Just the look on your face right now made that comment.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. It's been a great run of 3.5 episodes, and fuck this asshole. But seriously, when you're playing a team that went 73-9 and you're playing them in the second round on the road, it's not Rip City, it's RIP City, and don't lose by a ton. Mind you, they did play well in that second game to have a 15-point lead, but they had it for too early. Like, they had the 2-0 lead with 30 minutes into the game. The most dangerous lead in soccer. They had the most dangerous lead in basketball.
I'm bored already.
Rachel told me you shouldn't say that all the time. We're trying to cross-pollinate our loving viewer base of 20 people.
I do not want to cross-pollinate with other sports. No. That's how you get diseases. Anyway. Okay, so back to Breakers. Back to our match against the Breakers.
This is going to get edited so bad.
Not as bad as our first podcast. Anyways, so with the Breakers, we won 0-1 with a nice Tobin Heath assist to Dagny Brynjarsdóttir
from what?
Header.
We've figured, thanks. I'm so glad Carla came back because it was fun and she finally nailed down how for us to say that. Brynjarsdóttir.
So that was like a textbook finish. That looked like something they had probably been practicing over and over, and Dagny probably just went into training day mode.
Yeah. It looked like, well, the person, Dagny is 5'11", probably the tallest person on that field, certainly the tallest person in the realm of anybody that Boston defender had to square up. She didn't have to do much, she didn't have to do hardly any arm movement, she just moved to the spot, put her head on it, squared forehead into the left side.
Yep. But it was a beautiful, you know, it was a beautiful finish. The highlight of the match, because the rest of the match was boring, but considering the bloodbath that normally occurs at Boston away, I'll take it.
Yeah. We did have more offsides than them, ironically, even though they were trying to play us off the counter for most of that game, at least most of the first half. They have some good pieces, Boston does, and they made a couple of nice tries in the middle, but they have to get that, they have to get McCaffrey involved a little bit.
You know who I thought looked really good was Zerboni.
Yeah.
She led, was all over the ball.
She led a great forward pass that led to their first real dangerous attempt, I think, in the 61st minute. Ball. She throws a nice, like, 20-yard pass out to the right wing. Right wing cooks it in. Misses the first person on the right edge of the 18. It comes, like, right around the 8-10-yard box. Square center, right in front of Franch. Someone's got to get a foot on that if you're a Boston fan.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they have work to do. They might be the last... If Sky Blue looked competent enough in two of their first three games. I think they're at 4 points. Boston needs to get their stuff together if they don't want to be dead last in this league again. That's too bad. I like seeing the teams like... I like seeing Red Stars, Spirit, those teams that existed in the pre-NWSL days doing well. So, you know.
Yeah, that's... I don't know. That's that team that no one should ever lose to, the Breakers, but... We have.
Oh, yeah.
They tend to be that team we have blowouts. Either they bury us or we bury them. So the fact that... Well, we lost to them last year off of a header. Like, last-minute header, wasn't it?
I can't remember if we lost 1-0 at the end or 2-0.
1-0. 1-0 at the end. It was off of a... I forget who put the header in, but it went past Michelle Bados. Poor thing. There's nothing she could do about it. Because our back line was shit.
Yeah.
Our back line's looking a little bit better. I'm kind of concerned what's going to happen when everyone leaves for the Olympics. And if we don't have Kat back.
Yeah. Like I was doing, mentioned it I did a statistics. I can post them on the show notes of conversion percentage and shot on goal percentage for players in the first three games. And I usually kept it to people with at least shot six shots total, not necessarily on target. But 200 for our side, Nadia Nedim, everyone loves her. She was an absolute pilferer her first season for Sky Blue. This year, 261 minutes, three shots, one on target, no goals. We need to get her involved, especially with Sink still being out. Who knows, a month, plus she'll roll basically right into the Olympics. We're not looking that good without Jody Taylor.
And when Tobin's gone.
Yeah, Tobin. I mean, we'll basically...
We rely on her a lot. She's got the... She has the assists for all of our goals.
Yeah, what's our team going to look like, at least in training and cohesion, through the Olympics? It'll be, I don't know, maybe Mana Shim on the wing, or... And then we'll just pray that Long can loft the ball into Brynja Stauder's forehead and see what the fuck happens.
Well, isn't Long going to the Olympics, though? Or has that not been decided?
I wouldn't expect her to with the late addition that she is, but mm-hmm. it's still a possibility. I mean, if we mm-hmm. lose her and it's... I mean, shit, we don't have a... I don't know if we have a holding/defensive midfielder, because both of them will be gone, and Horan. Oh my god, I'm crying now. This is bad.
You know, it is what it is. So next on our East Coast tour is the Washington Spirit.
Oh boy.
And we're Crystal Dunn, who is lovely on the ball, but yeah. Scary as shit.
Matheson had a brace. I think they have the... I think they might have the highest goal tally so far in the league, very close to Seattle Reign, and yeah.
This is going to be kind of a homecoming for Mark Parsons. Here's what we're going to see. Yeah.
How good a coach is he?
Well, I mean, here's what we're going to do, because, like, the Spirit did well. I think they made it into the playoffs last year, didn't they?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, we're going to see, did the Spirit make it into the playoffs? I mean, obviously they have really good players.
I believe they were, I could be wrong, I believe they were the home team against...
Seattle?
Yeah, I think I'm wrong. Maybe I think they lost in the final semifinal, but anyway. Yeah, they're dangerous. Long pause. You're not really helping me out very well, buddy.
I'm listening to you talk.
What Parsons can do if the scheme's different, I have no idea. The nuts and bolts of a lot of the formational machinations is certainly beyond the two of us here. But it'll be interesting how he tries to attack her.
And I think, and I don't know this for sure, but I thought I heard on Soccer Made in Portland that they just stayed on the East Coast the entire week. The Thorns did.
Yeah.
Because it made more sense than flying here and then flying back out. Because, like, you have to... I think they fly out about 2 days ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
So it made no sense.
Yeah.
So, and I would imagine that Parsons has some connections and is able to work those so that he can get his team, get the Thorns somewhere for training. But, you know, the thing that the Thorns... We want to harp on the Thorns all the time for their away day performance. But let's... Unless it's, you know... Seattle is one thing... Because Seattle is just... They're just fucking scary, no matter who they're playing.
They can throw a three up on the road anytime.
But the Thorns suffer in Seattle as well, because... Maybe not Seattle as much. I don't know. I don't know Seattle's away record. But the Thorns' away record is awful, because it's like... Aside from going to Seattle, there's no other... We have to travel to the other side of the country.
This league is not conducive to shootouts. You're absolutely right. I would love to see a... home goals versus away goals expected analytics to see how many goals of difference you'd see home versus road, because mm-hmm. you see a lot of teams go East Coast, go West Coast and just not show up. Maybe it's because of short travel time and not being able to spend enough time to get over jet lag and fatigue of training to get to the game. Variance in surface between different types mm-hmm. of rock hard turf and lush, soft, spongy grass. Still definitely a league in transition in that regard, for sure. Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how this Spirit match plays out, because I don't think the Thorns came home. I think they stayed on the East Coast, and maybe that'll give them a bit of a heads up to acclimate to their environment, and they're not going to be spending as much time in the airport. Like, that time spent traveling means, if they didn't come back here, they took that time they would have spent traveling to do for training.
Yeah, you can basically scrub a cross-country
mm-hmm.
day and then almost half a day, even if you do light training. So if you're leaving Thursday and then do a light training Friday for a Saturday game, yeah, you can probably count on nothing better than 1 point if you're friggin' lucky.
Yep. So currently we're sitting 2 points behind the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
They've got 9 points. We have 7. Seattle Reign have 6 yep. for now. And Orlando Pride have 3, which makes me happy. I don't have anything against the Pride, but kind
of
do.
Well, yeah, of course. Like, Miss Bacon. But you look, as great as they were in that opening game, as I bring to my stats list that I've got, they're not very efficient scoring. Looking at, let's see, here we got Alex Morgan, 10 shots, 50% shots on target, so 5 of those on goal, but only 1 converted. So when you talk about a conversion percentage of 10%, that's not very good. She's obviously the dynamic, money making, crowd drawing force for Orlando. You'd want her to be a pilferer. You want her to be, you know, a world beater of mm-hmm. sticking that foot out, putting it in the goal, and taking all the adulation. I mean, small sample size theater for a lot of these early goal tallies, but I think they need to be a little more consistent. Morgan was basically not available as a threat in that game against Portland in the opener. It was basically Jasmine Spencer and the other wings, like Catherine Reynolds was also involved. Or sorry, Christine Edmonds, Catherine Edmonds is our right back, working the wings, trying to get involvement, but no link-up play. She needs to build that rapport with her other players and work well, or, I don't know, Leanne Sanderson by herself could probably get this done if everyone's trying to mark Alex all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They have enough talent to be a playoff team, but I'm not sure if they'll get it all together this year.
Because there is that difficulty of being the new expansion team and people not having played together.
Yeah, a lot of different styles of play working together when you bring it in on an expansion draft, for sure.
I would say Orlando's probably going to face the same problems that the Thorns face every year, which is a whole new set of people.
Yeah.
You know, we have a core. We got Mana, who's here, Emily Mengus, and a few others, but we have such a high turnover rate that the Thorns just look sloppy, or at least unsettled in the beginning.
Yeah.
And I think Orlando's going to be facing that same problem. And they may not get it all together this year, but next year, if their core remains the same, and I hope it does, I think it'll be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah. I think one of the problems for Portland is being that destination for players where they'll take the pay cut to come and test out the environments meant for that turnover. You mm-hmm. know, only 6 back from this last year. I think we have 2 remaining from the inaugural roster in, I think, Long and Heath, in Sinclair, too. But if Orlando probably will be that East Coast destination team with having Sermani and his acumen at the coach, and I assume the money's going to stay there to bring in the players. But if they keep having consistent turnover in roster the way Portland has, it may not bode that well for them. And I know soccer, especially women's soccer, when your entire playing schedule is from age 22 to 31, basically, that there's going to be a lot of turnover roster to roster year to year. But having some cohesion in certain areas, midfield to forward, inside of your forwards, will help them. If they mm-hmm. can have Sanderson and Morgan working together, Sanderson, Morgan, and Spencer working together into year 2, they could be damn good.
Yep. All right. Do you want to place predictions on the match against the Spirit?
I'll be happy with a point. 1-1, 2-2, 3-3, I don't care. If they can score 3 on the road and get a tie, that would still feel phenomenal.
I don't think we've ever been able to score 3 goals on the road.
Probably not.
Let alone 3 points.
No, it's almost rare enough.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go with 1-1. Let's see. Who do we think is going to score our goal?
Why not Brini's daughter? 5'11". Icelandic Wonderwoman.
Why not? And I'm just, because I'm feeling lazy and I don't feel like thinking about it, I'm going to agree with you, because I was actually thinking Dagny Tobin for the assist, if not the goal, because she's been our Wonder Woman. And then Crystal
Dunn.
It'd
be a bad bet to bet against her being the assist leader for the league at the end of the year. Assisting, and she got on every single one.
She got player of the month, too.
That's awesome. Poor Kim Little. She's been lethal in her few shots on goal this year.
But now we're going to, like, we'll see how much of her lethality is her own or if it comes from the tandem that she plays with Fishlock. And with Fishlock injured,
yeah,
it's going to be kind of like the Dempsey and Martin's combination of,
yeah,
they're really good together, but how do they perform when one's injured?
Yeah, is Harvey going to be able to keep other people at bay and not allow us to use our, you know, Horan and Long to clamp her down and keep her busy? It'll be interesting to see. That should be a fun game.
Mm-hmm. So we have the rain coming up. That's the away match again. Because we have four away matches in a row,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of frustrating.
We will end the season 6 of 9 at home with the one of the three away matches being the last of the Seattle away matches. So the end of the season will be fun.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that might be another situation where we'd beg for a point and be happy with it.
Yeah.
I think we could almost pull it off, though, if they look wonky, or if we can make them look wonky.
Oh, and Rapinoe's out on injury, too, isn't she?
Of course, yeah. That's going to be an important question for Ellis to see mm-hmm. if it's worthwhile to bringing her back versus the otherwise excellent play. I mean, you know, you score, what, 8 goals in 2 games against Columbia? That means something's working still. It just means maybe you're not going to be having 50-yard whisk balls from the left side into the center mid, and you have to play a little more possession-based, leading to goals. You know, they have a lot, you know, they can certainly find an answer for that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Plus, also, and the most important related point is, who gives a shit about the gold? We already won the World Cup. That's always been my idea. Like, if you lose, what was it, 95 to 96, after the 95 loss to Norway in 96, or losing the World Cup in 03 and winning the gold in 04, it's not going to feel good enough for those women.
To me, the Olympics...
The consolation prize.
The Olympics are kind of like... The way I see them is it's a training... It's a warm-up to the Olympics, even though the Olympics aren't for another...
Yeah, maybe...
2 years, 3 years.
Yeah, probably a barometer into the 3-year castaway off season.
Yep.
Well, yeah. What would you say your prediction in that rain game would be? Obviously, we still don't know what we're going to look like in spirit, and that will be...
Here's the thing. I don't like... My heart has been broken in Seattle more times than I care to admit, because our away matches to Seattle have always fallen on my birthday, and all I've ever wanted was a point.
3-0, 5-0, 5-0, 3-0.
Oh my god, they were so gross. And the worst part, too, so losing to Seattle at home is one thing, because you're surrounded by Portland supporters, and the Seattle shits are at the other end of the park, mm-hmm. right? But then when we go to Memorial and we're playing, and we lose, you've got people just one row over just, like, giving us shit, trolling us, because they can. They're just right there, and that's hard to deal with.
There are a lot of middle fingers in that, especially the 5-0 game, where, they score and they just turn around and point at you. It'll be nice, I think, this year. They've now opened up both sides of the decks, so I believe the contingent going in the buses will be in the lower levels areas. So that'll be nicer, probably on the south side
mm-hmm.
of the stadium.
Oh, so on the other side?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that'll be nice. Put us a little bit closer to our players.
Yeah. Yeah, south, east.
Not that they couldn't hear us anyways, because we were the loudest contingent there.
They don't have organized chants. They did the weird clap at their own corners on the offensive end.
I think what they did is they took some of the Sounders chants and kind of co-opted them for the rain.
I wouldn't even know what a Sounders chant sounds like, because that building's so huge, and unless you have the best 7-1 surround set up, it's hard to pick out words. It's hard enough to pick out words even if you know half of them for Timbers games.
There's the one that the Sounders are known for is I think it's their boom boom clap. And it's the most ridiculous thing. And it's essentially they do it right before the start of the game, before kickoff. And I think it's the only one that they can get everyone involved in, because it's really simple and has the least amount of syllables, so they can remember it. I don't know it off the top of my head.
That's fine. don't need to orate that shit.
Yeah, I don't need to bring. I don't need to bring the name of the enemy into my home. By the way, we're recording this in my new apartment.
Yeah, so you can expect the audio levels, as you already know, but now to be much worse.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And if you're hearing stuff outside in the background, that is the patio for the other for a restaurant outside my apartment.
Mood jostling of plates.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so anything else we want to talk about? The NWSL? Thorns? What are we feeling?
Nothing more on the Thorns, I'd say. I think we've covered how scared we are for the rest of the road trip that they survive going into the Seattle away and back into the home stretch. Houston has looked a little iffy after that monstrous loss against Orlando. They were kind of my preseason pick as the most dangerous team outside of Seattle.
Is it Lloyd out on injury, though?
Yeah.
And she's like, they're big.
Yeah, Daly, though, looked really good. I think she had two assists and a goal in their opening game and then was almost nowhere to be found mm-hmm. since. I look forward to playing them, preferably at home. But, yeah, we'll see how they continue to look. They still could be a dangerous team. FC Kansas City, another goalless endeavor on the road, losing 1-0. Who knows? I think they lost too much with the Halliday retirement and two ladies out on maternity leave essentially for the entire year in Rodriguez and LaRue. They might be done, at least for this year.
Yeah. Let's see. Anything else? No? Do you want to talk MLS? Timbers? Did we watch the Timbers match on Saturday?
Did we watch the Timbers match?
I did.
Watched the first half, took a nap, and then had to watch the replay 1,400 times of Valeri's very beautiful free kick. Very beautiful.
Yes. His free kick reminded me of Christian Eriksen from Tottenham. Because Eriksen's free kicks, when he scored on his free kicks, they are gorgeous. They are lethal. I think, who did we play?
They're gorgeous. Dimitri Payet's free kicks are lethal. Those are literally turn on the TV and leave work quality. Eriksen's are kind of, I would consider her Lauren Holiday in a sense, where they're booming and there's can be curl, there can be, it can sit in the air for so long that you have to put the sundial on it, and then everyone fucks up their defensive mm-hmm. coverages and someone, Kane throws his header at it.
Yeah. Eriksen's free kicks are nice. And I remember one of the first Tottenham goals I ever saw was his free kick. And it was, he free kicked his way into my heart, and then Valeri did the exact same thing on, was that Sunday? Yeah. On Sunday against Toronto. But even more beautiful than that were Jake Leeson's saves. And I thought those were really nice. Like,
for kind of a almost nobody backup goalkeeper, he did really well. He even made, I think, the best 11 for MLS.
Mm-hmm. He had some really nice, like, on, how's it put?
Right at him.
Yeah, like, just shot, like, the shots that were, like, right at him.
Yeah, good reaction to him. Getting the hands up, getting the hands in the face, and deflecting, yeah. And that, I mean, it looks, I mean, we've watched enough goals to where that looks like it's sent to good nature, but that's still work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was impressive. Because I'll be honest, I went to enough T2 matches last year to kind of just be like, have my doubts about Gleason. I don't think he looked that great at T2 last year, but it could have also been that our back line wasn't that good.
Yeah.
You know, he was with Sacramento Republic when they won the championship, and I think he might be the goalkeeper for the New Zealand national team.
Well, that's saying something.
Sarcasm is noted.
I watched New Zealand's they were in a two-leg final with Mexico to get into the 2014 World Cup, and it was savage. It was not good. But yes, he does have 8 caps since 2011 for New Zealand.
You've got eight caps for New Zealand since 2011. It's great, yeah.
If this were Twitter, I would tell you to delete your account.
I have several half-decent accents, mostly UK-related. So
I don't know what that was.
Podcasts friendships ended. I don't recommend you starting one. It's okay though.
Friendships.
Yeah, you did well. No idea how long Quarcy's going to be out, but you know, you got a 25-year-old
guy who's already proven it in one game. Mm-hmm. We'll see how small sample size theater plays out if he has to do it for several months.
Yeah, and everyone's already asking, of course, he should be worried that his job is going to be gone when he gets back. And it's like, no.
No.
No, not off of one match.
He seems to be a wee more capable of the acrobatic save. Gleason's physique doesn't quite fit that mold, so... You know, he does what he does, and he does it well.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was a great match. There was questions as to whether or not Will Johnson should have gotten a red card for his tackle. Studs up, kind of high.
Yeah.
Went right into Valeri. I was curious to see how the Timbers Army faithful would react to having Will Johnson back home. Because he's someone that you love him if he plays for you, but you hate him if he's playing against you. Because he's kind of a rough person.
He's an aggressor. He's not... I shouldn't say aggressor. That sounds
kind of
too
petulant.
Much. Yeah, he's freewheeling, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You watch that the replay, and yes, definitely studs involved. You can make the argument somewhat competently that he gets his left foot on the ball as he does the studs, but they fucked it up anyway. At the very least, it's a talking to and a solid fucking yellow in mm-hmm. any league, if not a red, and you can argue one way or the other against yeah. the red.
And you know, in previous plays have in MLS this year, similar plays have garnered a red card, and this time it didn't. And it almost makes you wonder what constitutes a red card in MLS these days. It's just so arbitrary anymore. Like, it was clearly studs up. Which, if it didn't get a red card, maybe it should get a look at by the MLS disciplinary committee. Doesn't sound like it's going to. Yeah.
I don't like using the phrase sending a message, because it's almost an attempt to scare off everyone with a unsubstantiated an unsubstantiated penalty in any sense. But you have to make it known one way or the other that this league has grown and we cannot allow this lower tier shit to happen if we want to have a quality reputation throughout this region, throughout this hemisphere, throughout the world of what MLS is capable of. You know, if you're going to, I've heard other podcasts and other people talk about trying to create a pipeline where those 20 early 19s or 20 somethings European kids that can't break into a Chelsea or Arsenal first team coming and making a different experience in MLS and being able to play a little faster. But if a 19-year-old Jack Barnby equivalent sees the kind of shit that Will Johnson gets nothing called for, like they called it a ball win, basically. If I'm trying to make my career and make my strides, and I see that shit as a regular occurrence of nothing, why would I want to come here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can risk all of your injury and not even lead your team, give your team a positive chance to score, a positive chance to win, what is pro referee telling for the quality, for the amount of physicality?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll be honest. Part of me is tired of hearing about pro. Like, because every week since the beginning of the season, there's been a discussion about pro and why they can't seem to do their jobs correctly.
Yeah.
And it's getting tiring. Like, it just seems like the new norm these days.
Yeah, it would be one thing if one call from one or two calls every week from all of the slate of games is something that has to go to a board and they say what kind of reckless an additional game... reckless and additional three games, that kind of thing that you see the English Football Association do all the time. But it's the most pivotal plays, multiple games, like even what was it, Orlando New England Revolution, there were back to back within 3 minutes in stoppage time awful calls on both sides, and it's like you can't really wash that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just two really bad calls that you have to kind of be the next barometer of what do we do to improve, how do we do it now, it's the middle of the fucking season. It's so chaotic, and I don't blame you for not wanting to listen hear about pro is a manufactured entity by MLS to make things gooder, and we are not anywhere close to gooder enough
for fuck's sake. If you're going to control the method to make things better, you should have fucking done it in 2012 and not in 2016.
Yeah.
If you need to hire someone from... if you need to pay... I mean, this is a league where Giovinco got a quadruple or quintuple payroll increase to be a superstar for Toronto. Maybe we can pay five times what your best Champions League ref will make and have him do pro versus trying to baptize Americans.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be I think pro is stretched, and I think MLS growing the way it wants to is going to exasperate that problem. We don't have enough good refs. We don't have good enough refs in this league to handle any more teams, but MLS is hell bent on expanding to 28 teams by like 2022.
Yeah,
and nonsense.
And we're
like
only
that.
Talking about referee quality with additional games. We're not even talking about how all of these additional expansions are going to dilute every other team in the league as you lose quality bench, your solid, if not spectacular, starting players going to those new expansion teams. As obviously with U23 results for the men's side leading into the Olympics prove, we don't have that pool of youngsters to replace those. And we have a stringent salary cap that says you can't, blow other teams out of the water transfer fees and salaries to get these players over. It has to be something. It has to be both, obviously. Mm-hmm. We need better refereeing, more quality refereeing that doesn't scare away internationals, and we need better youngsters here and abroad. Obviously, you look at examples like FC Dallas, where they're bringing in German Academy players, or they're bringing in South American 20-something studs and giving them minutes and building with, but every team used to do that. I don't see, outside of maybe the younger Beisler for T2, I don't see a lot that excites me for the next regular Timbers roster. And every team...
Not even Carlton Belmar?
Is he a USL one-season wonder? That's a good question. I don't want to disparage him, but...
No, I think he scored the majority of the goals last season, and he's been scoring the goals this season, too. He's good. I think T2 is going to... It needs time.
Yeah,
but
they're hiring very competent collegiate coaches, and that's a good step because most of those players are basically, right out of the depths of a college graduation and an MLS Super Draft spot. But... Is the USL to MLS gap is bigger than we think? Good question. That's a not a answer for me to say by any means. I still haven't listened to it. You may have the Play the Kids podcast that I think FC Collective is sponsoring, where it's basically all about the growth and the player development at T2. Maybe it'd be fun to talk with those folk and see what their opinions are on what Belmar could do if injuries were to require him to be a second striker or the primary striker for a few minutes with Timbers.
Hmm. Yeah.
It would be fun. There would be a lot of drinking involved, a lot of preparatory scared drinking, but yeah. He could probably do the job in a pinch. We sure thought ID was kind of a shitter for about a season and a quarter until he turned into El Braso Magnifico.
Well, then also is the talk of Zarek Valentine. Everyone was... Is it Zarek? Is that his name?
Yes. I believe so.
Yeah, I keep thinking of the Battlestar Galactica guy. Preseason, everyone was shitting on him, talking about how bad he was, and now it's... Is he going to take Albus Powell's spot as the right back?
He's 28, though, and Powell's still, cooking at 22, so that's not necessarily a...
But still,
the baby out with the bathwater situation.
Yeah, but still, it kind of highlights this the way some fans will shit on a player early on and not give them a chance to actually acclimate and get into their and get into role, get into position, and then we'll go from shitting on that player to saying, "Oh, they're gonna take that spot from whoever is the first team." Pick for that position. Anyways, that's my digression.
Oh, that's fine. But there's a lot in that back line that needs to have a 100% solidified solution.
Mm-hmm. I think we're still trying to figure out the left back. Because Zarek plays left back, doesn't he?
I believe he has, yes.
Yeah, then who the hell do we have on the right? Why am I blanking on this? I
thought Albus Powell was a right back.
He is. So the left back position was...
The one we lost to to Santos Laguna, man.
Uh-huh, that was Villafania, but then we came down to Cloutey. Also played the left back. It was between Cloutey and Valentin. We went to Cloutey first, but Cloutey was injured, and so Valentin went in there.
Does Beasler play the wing at all, or is he mostly a center back?
I think Beasler's generally... I forget. I think
we have
generally
Taylor PA, or however the last name is.
Oh, Taylor Pay. I think he generally plays that right back position.
Oh, there went that idea.
Yeah. I forget.
Hashtag bad Timbers depth charts here. We're a Thorns podcast, remember.
Actually, we're just kind of general soccer podcast. I can't pay attention to everything.
We did go 20 minutes in EPL before we talked about the Thorns. Whoopsie doopsie.
It's a big thing to talk about. Hey, Leicester
won.
What are you going to do? So Saturday, we have Vancouver away. So Timbers at Vancouver. Our house in the middle of BC.
That game could go so many fucking positive ways or psycho sideways. I mean, there could be Vancouver bonfires from winning. There could be Vancouver bonfires from losing. There could be Timbers army members throwing other Timbers army members out of the section because of dissidents. That could be a weird game.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be a fun one to watch.
And we get to play against... I know there's a lot of maybe team-centric hate, but I loved having Blas Perez go to Vancouver because they hated him so much, but he's so MLS sexy. I mean, in the sense that he's fiery and flamboyant and he pilfers goals that he doesn't fucking deserve and does it with aplomb and does it with flair. Oh, that man. I mean, there's... Twitter could get fucking crazy if he's in any form in that game.
Yeah, he's the man you love to hate.
Caliente!
I one time told him to go fuck himself on Twitter, and then a year later he liked my tweet.
I like that style. That's almost like a Vardy with the Lion King response of the Mustafa or whatever falling off the fucking cliff. After they'd won, secured the title because Harry Kane had done an Instagram of Lions approaching.
Yeah.
That was woke as shit. And Tavardi seems to be kind of a dickweed in some regards, but
racist shitbag, dickweed. Yeah. You say dickweed, I say racist shitbag. You know, same difference.
He's just what the Premier League deserves. After we lost Balotelli, we deserve another Balotelli, and we got one. Got one with a really weird facial structure and a really piney accent.
Did you see that tweet about...
That's why Harry Kane is not going to be a world superstar, is because he talks like he has a mouth full of peanut butter in his mouth.
That's a speech impediment. You can't hold that against him.
So I got a real good game there. Real good side playing really well.
This is true. He does, but that's just his speech impediment.
I mean, if you get me high enough and I'm listening, I would love to listen to... I would love to get some Alaska Thunderfuck weed, listen to I would like to listen to Mauricio Pochettino in English interview Harry Kane in whatever pretend Welsh English he pretendly has as his main peanut butter language. It'd be better than, I don't know, taking ecstasy and watching Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas with all the lights out.
All right.
I'm getting a really fun look. That means that we're doing really well here, and it might be the end of the podcast as well.
Okay, then on that note.
Yeah.
It's
been fun. It's been a joy being your temporary friend, and this has been a great podcast. So I'll never see you again.
This is true, unless it's at Thorns matches, because then we're kind of required to sit together, because we've all been in that area for like 3 years now.
Well, we had
in that section.
We've had a couple of unnamed people come join the group and be friendly and leave.
That's going to happen, though.
Yeah,
I guess we have to be nice to each other, you and I.
I suppose.
Okay.
I made friends with people I didn't think I'd make friends with or love as much as I do.
Like me?
Yeah, pretty much only you.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah. And it's great. I don't know. That's the one thing. If you listen to this podcast and don't go to an NWSL game, I highly recommend it. Find whatever weird, savage group of 20 to 20,000 supporters group fans you go to, because I don't care how weird or not weird you are, you're going to enjoy yourself. Like, I think I'm being really awful to fans, and then I've got Kirsten behind me screaming worse things than me. Or if I'm feeling especially bad,
your wife,
Jenna. Jenna will come and back me up if I'm saying something particularly, like, I'm not going to mention the one situation where Jenna was the only person in the entire section to back me up, because it's bad for both of us. But yeah, it's fucking, it's quality, wholesome, local
family entertainment
and solidarity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you're not a member of the Timbers Army and the 107ist for the Riveter side, please do support local 134 in Chicago.
Cloud Nine, Sky Blue.
Their new scarves were really pretty. I would almost buy one just in solidarity there.
I would do that anyways. I haven't seen them. Buy one.
We should figure out if they ever come visit on a road trip, because I would love, you know, it'd be fun to meet them, whether it's us individually or just hanging out with people at Bozzy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good people in WOSO.
Blue Crew, especially.
Yeah. Although them making us want to chant for them, which was like a mutiny situation during the title game. I mean, I was standing and I was like, nodding my head positively, like, yeah, you go on, Blue Crew, but I'm not going to sing your fucking chants.
I did it once. It was very hard, but it was because I had a chance to troll Seattle.
Well, you were behind Seattle. Behind enemy lines is quite a different situation.
It is, and rather being at Providence Park.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Being at Providence Park and singing another soccer team's chants, that's like singing a Buddhist hymn in a Mormon temple.
Yeah.
If Buddhists have hymns, I don't know anything about it, but that's the equivalent.
Mm-hmm. It's like voting for Trump. It's like voting for Trump because you hate Hillary.
I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go that far.
Well, I'm trying to think of a comparison. It's like voting for Trump because you know Kasich is more of a woman hater. It's still wrong in every assertion, but it might be the right choice.
I think we're still stretching it. And on that note, we should wrap this up.
All right. Thank you all, and see you again in the next coming weeks.